day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Guardians of the Holy Grail, a program dedicated to diving deep, uncover, and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. This show, the Guardians of the Holy Grail, was created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions regarding the secret societies, the Holy Grail mysteries, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Through this show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, and other initiatic societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar, which over the centuries have either been lost or ignored. You can learn more about our Gnostic Templar organization, and you can sign our mailing list and receive our monthly e-news. You can do that by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, during today's show, if you have any questions for myself or our guests, feel free to call on our toll-free line. Number is 866-472-5795. Before we get into today's show, I'd like to mention a little pilgrimage that I'm going to be leading in southern France and Spain this year because it directly relates to what we're going to be talking about. This pilgrimage I'm going to be leading will run from September 20th to the 30th. My co-leader of the pilgrimage will be Nancy Safford, who is a lady who has explored the region we're going to many times and has even lived there for stretches of time. During this pilgrimage, we're going to go to some of the most exciting and mysterious places in southern France and northern Spain. We've been talking about these places in previous shows, specifically Rennes-le-Château, which is the first place we're going to go on this pilgrimage. This, of course, was the place where the priest Baron de Saunier is alleged to have discovered some hidden documents that record the holy bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. We're going to Rennes-le-Bain, which some hot springs right below Rennes-le-Château, which have been used for centuries for goddess rituals and worship and Mary Magdalene worship. And we're going to Bayeux, which is an ancient castle built by the Knights Templar. Bougeroc, near there is a holy mountain we're going to visit, which is rumored to contain a network of tunnels that were once used by the Templars and the Cathars. We're going to Montsegur, which, of course, is the famous mountaintop temple of the Cathars, but was used as their last refuge from the Inquisition. And Saint Marie de la Mer, some of you might recognize that name. That was where Mary Magdalene and many of the disciples of Jesus landed on the coast of coast of France after leaving the Holy Land. And it's a place that's very sacred to the gypsies and contains a statue of their patroness, Black Sarah, which is one of the most powerful of the Black Madonnas in Europe. And another Black Madonna we're going to visit is on Montserrat in northern Spain. Montserrat is a very interesting place, very mysterious. There's a lot of legends associated with it, especially about Holy Grails. There's legends that Joseph of Arimathea brought the cup of Christ to Montserrat. There's legends of the Knights Templar bringing some version of the Holy Grail there, and the Knights Templar having been involved with mysterious rituals in some of the caves in the surrounding area. Many believe that Montserrat is the Grail Castle that's referred to in many of the Holy Grail legends that were written in the 12th and 13th centuries. And so there could actually be some manifestations of the Holy Grail still there. If nothing else, what they could be referring to when they associate Holy Grail with Montserrat is the power, the energy of this area, which is very transformative. It is certainly, no doubt, a very high-powered vortex area, similar to where I live here in Sedona, Arizona. So at Montserrat and some of these other places we're going to visit, we're going to be doing a lot of rituals in order to use the powerful energies that we're going to be, that are going to be surrounding us. We have a great, powerful ceremony scheduled for the full moon and the equinox. And all along our pilgrimage route, we're going to be talking about the cutting-edge information regarding the mysteries of the region, as well as the recent discoveries that have been made. Now, to learn more about this pilgrimage and to register for it, if you like, please visit the website www.sacredsitesjourneys.com, sacredsitesjourneys.com. We're going to be limiting the tour to probably 15 people, so you don't want to wait to register. And if you need another incentive, if you register by March 15th, you'll get a discount on the tour price. So I hope that many of you will register and that you'll join me on this amazing pilgrimage. Now, today we're going to be talking about Rennes-le-Château and one of the amazing discoveries that have been made there in the last year or two. My guest is Ben Hammett, a man who in the last couple of years discovered a mummy that's surrounded by treasures and parchment and artifacts. This mummy was found by Ben inside a cave in the Rennes-le-Château area. So a lot of you might know Ben through the documentary film Bloodline. Ben was featured on that film, and actually he took Bruce Burgess, who was the leading character of that film, to the cave and showed him the mummy inside of it. Apparently Ben was initially guided to that cave by a lot of clues that were left behind by the priest Berenger Sanier. When he did find the mummy, it was apparently covered with a shroud with a Knight Templar, red Knight Templar cross painted on it, which seems to indicate that the Knights Templars had something to do with maybe placing that mummy there. Now, according to clues that Ben knows about and perhaps we'll hear about today, Ben feels that this mummy he discovered could very well be that of Mary Magdalene. Because there are a lot of ancient legends all throughout the Rennes-le-Château area that her body is entombed there someplace. Ben's mummy is the body of Mary Magdalene. It could very well be one of the greatest discoveries in the last 1,000 years. So this is amazing stuff we're talking about. Now, Ben first became interested in the Rennes-le-Château area after watching a television documentary about the area and learning about the mysterious priest Berenger Sanier, who, as many of you know, suddenly became very wealthy after finding a hidden parchment inside his ancient church that was dedicated to Mary Magdalene and delineated the bloodline between Mary and Jesus. When Ben later traveled to Rennes-le-Château, he entered the church and he discovered a sign there that, or some kind of deciphering tool through which he was able to decipher clues that were put around by Berenger Sanier in the area, and so he followed one clue after another to find these amazing discoveries. Not only did he find the mummy, the cave of the mummy, but he's found artifacts that are at least 2,000 years old. And apparently they're somehow said to be linked to Jesus and Mary. So we're going to find out as much as we can from Ben about his discoveries and perhaps what he's up to now. So welcome, Ben. Greetings and welcome to the show. Ben?
Yes, hello.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Ben.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah, there you are. Nice to have you on the show, Ben.
Thank you. Nice to be. I've been looking forward to it.
Good. Well, I have, and I know a lot of other people have as well. Well, tell me, Ben, when did you start visiting Rennes Le Château, and how many times have you been there? I mean, can you even remember them all?
I first heard about it on television, on the documentary, as you mentioned, in 97. My first trip to Rennes was in 99, and I've been back, must be getting on for 40 times now, 30, 40 times.
Wow. Well, that's
but it's easy for me because I live quite near the coast, so I can just nip on the ferry and drive down to Rennes, whereas people a bit further afield, like especially people in America, it's like a major expedition to get there.
Well, you know, you mentioned that when you first arrived at Rennes Le Château, that you discovered some kind of key that you used to decipher Baron J. Saunier's clues. What exactly was this key that you found?
What it is, as you go into the church, there's the holy water font where, you know, where you dip your fingers in and make the sign of the cross.
Right,
and
right.
There's an inscription on it that Sonia put on it, is, by this sign, you will vanquish or defeat him. And there was a demon underneath. So I thought, well, this has got to be screaming out to be a clue. So after a bit of thinking, I laid the sign of the cross out in the church, and it pointed to four objects. And those four objects, when matched, all matched up with the landscape, certain places in the landscape. And when you drew a line between them on the landscape, it made a cross. And in the center of this cross was where I made a discovery.
So that was the very beginning of your discoveries. You've made a series of them since then, right?
Yes, have, yeah. The first message we found was again by using the holy water stoop, which is the demon's armchair or devil's armchair, which is in Rennes-le-Bas, nearby to Rennes-le-Château. And it's an armchair carved out of stone. And the demon in Sonia's church is in a position like he should be sitting on something, but there's no chair there to sit on. So I matched those two up, and by the devil's armchair, I found the first message. And this message had a series of clues on it, and these clues led to another location and another message, and so forth, until I deciphered them all.
Well, you feel like you have deciphered them all. You don't feel like there's any more left for you to cover?
Yeah, I say deciphered them all. We're still working on the final one because, I don't know if you know, there's a rumour that there's a temple, an underground temple around Rennes Le Château somewhere in one of the mountains. And on this last clue, we have a map of an underground series of tunnels. And in the centre, there's a Star of David. So we think this is the temple. But we've been trying to find the entrances. There's entrances marked on this map. But everywhere we go, if we find a cave, we go inside, but it's all blocked. It's all caved in. It's been so long now that most of the tunnels are clapped. So what we do at the moment, I'm going out there soon again, and we go and survey the area, and any tunnel or hole in the ground we find, we try and get into this hole as far as we can to see if it leads into this complex, you know, to get into this temple.
Wow. Are you working with some other people then right now? You said we go to these places together.
Yeah, I have some friends. I have some German friends, and they're good cavers. They've got all the gear and all that. So, because obviously it's not something you can do on your own, just in case anything goes wrong. So, yeah, I go with them, and we explore and do what we can.
So do you think that maybe... Are you sure that you've actually deciphered this last clue correctly? Didn't Saunier write them all in some kind of a cipher?
Yes, they were all coded. But I think after getting through all the early ones, I don't think that he would have changed the way he encrypted the last one. So So I think I'm doing it right. I may have missed something, but we keep looking at it and going back and looking on it and trying to work it out a different way. But it always comes down to the same thing, that there's this map and we have to find an entrance into this series of tunnels to get into the temple. It's pretty straightforward. You know, it can't be seen anywhere other way. But the thing is, there's no landmarks on the map. So we don't know in which direction the tunnel map should be turned and located on the landscape. So it's a bit of trial and error at the moment. The top of the message is missing, and we think there was a landmark there which would have given us our reference, but it's missing off the top of the paper where it decayed a bit.
So how long have you been searching for these tunnels now, Ben?
Oh, must be over a year now. But that's not constant searching, obviously. I go out there a week here, 2 weeks there, and we search the hills.
Well, maybe, do you think maybe you found the tunnel, but it's already been caved in, so you weren't able to, you know, discover the underground temple?
Yeah, but there's six entrances. We've only found, we think we found three of them. So we've still got three more to find, and hopefully one of them will still be opened. Well, the Priory of Sion, Nick Haywood, which you saw in the film,
right.
He said there were six before I even saw this map. And he said that they're all blocked except one. And so it is this one we're looking for.
So you believe that the Priory of Sion knows where the right entrance is, then?
Well, I don't know what to make of the Priory of Sion. I don't know if they've got anything or they just, like, go, they hear something and they just pass something on, because they're very cryptic. They never come out and say, well, black is black or white is white. You know, they say, well, that black is a bit grey, you know. They don't give you a straight answer. It's everything cryptic, so that they give you a little bit of information and you have to, like, fill in the blanks. So it's not easy. I still don't know what to make of them.
Well, we had Renee Barnett on the show not too long ago, and we've also had Rob Howells have been working along with you in these mysteries, and they believe that the Priory of Sion is somehow leading them on, that the Priory wants to use you all as a vehicle to uncover something very important right now, perhaps the body of Mary Magdalene. Have you felt that at all, that they are somehow perhaps leading you on to a discovery?
Well, I certainly at times felt that I was being led, whether it was by the Priory or somewhere else, I don't know. But the frustrating thing is, the Priory wants this thing found. Why don't they just come and say, we'll go here and you will find it? You know, why all this mucking about? So when I was talking to Rob Howells about this, he said that maybe they have a timeline and that timeline hasn't arrived yet. But he doesn't think it's that far away.
But the clues that you've uncovered, they're not from the Priory. They're from Baron J. Saunier, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it's probably a bit confusing because they all seem to be interwoven. They all seem, the Priory and the Saunier clues seem to be leading to the same thing. So this is why I was hoping that if the Priory did know, they would give me a big clue rather than just a few cryptic words, which may fill in the blanks of the Sonia clues, that may be something that I've missed, you know, like put the two together and I will have the answer.
Right. Well, do you believe that Baron de Sonia was somehow connected to the Priory and that they were also very much involved in the work that he was doing?
No, I don't believe that Sonia was a member of the Priory or had anything to do with them, because there's no symbolism in his church to reference to it, and I believe there would have been if he was a member of the Priory Sion. I think how Berenger Sonia came about, he moved into the village in 1885, penniless, as you said, found something in his church which led him to something which made him a wealthy man, and there's definitely a tomb involved, because in his diary in 1891, he actually wrote in his diary, found a tomb, you know, and that's there, that's his act, in his actual handwriting, everything. So we know he found a tomb. So it could be this the same tomb that I found, because, you know, his clues led to it, so you would imagine it was.
Exactly, right. Well, so what kind of artifacts have you, has this treasure hunt uncovered for you? You said that there was apparently some 2,000-year-old artifacts you found?
Yeah, there was a cup and an anointing jar, which, if the Sonia papers are right, they belong to Mary and Joseph, Mary and Jesus, but it doesn't say in what contents that they were belonging to them. It didn't say that they were used as part of a wedding ceremony or anything like that. It just said that they once belonged to Mary and Jesus, Mary Magdalene, that is. And also there was a small glass vial of alabaster, imitation alabaster, and inside was a small piece of vellum, and this had a message from a previous priest of Rennes Chateau, the Antoine Bigot, and he's the one that hid the message, the parchment, inside the church that Sonia later found. And we believe that this piece of vellum is that actual parchment from Bigot himself. And on this parchment, it's got a diagram of the church, and it's got like crosses here and a picture of a chest buried in the old graveyard. So we think this is one of the parchments Sonia found back in 1890, and he went into the graveyard digging at these places, and he found, we believe, a small chest, and inside the chest could have been these papers, maybe bloodline of Mary and Jesus or something like that. Because we know he was digging in the graveyard at this time, because he was seen by the villagers, and there was letters written to the mayor, and the mayor actually had to have a word with Sonia to stop digging, you know, up the graves in the graveyard. So we know that's all factual. That all happened.
So, but you do believe that it was Sonia and not his predecessor that hid these artifacts?
Yeah, I think they may have come from the tomb, these artifacts that I found. Bigot, this was during the French Revolution when Bigot was the priest of Rennes Chateau, and of course he had to escape the country when during the French Revolution because he was a royalist. And as you know, the French Revolution wasn't taken kindly to anyone who was a royalist. So he had to flee the country, and that's why he wrote this message and left in the church, which Sonia later found.
And so you've had these artifacts dated, have you not?
Yes, by the British Museum and by Gabby Barkey of Jerusalem. And both of them confirmed that they're genuine Jerusalem relics of 2,000 years old, which is amazing to hold something which is 2,000 years old. I'm actually looking at them now, actually. I've got them on my shelf at the minute.
Well, how do you think that they arrived in Rennes-le-Château? How did they get there, those relics?
Well, I think, though I have no proof, it's just what I think. I think that they may have come back with one of the crusading knights, whether it was one of the original nine Templar knights or someone else. But they were active in the area at the time, so we know that there was Templars there. And one of the Templars that lived nearby was one of the actual nine knights, the original nine knights, so, you know, part of his family. And the chateau in Rennes Chateau, which is only a few metres from the church, was owned by a Templar knight, the Hautpoils. So there is connection there between Rennes Chateau and Jerusalem in the village.
Fascinating. Well, you over the mummy in the cave that you discovered, or the tomb, if you will, there's a shroud that covers the mummy, and there's a big Templar cross painted on top of the shroud. Would you say then that there must be some connection between that mummy and the Templars?
Yes. Again, how I think this stuff got into this cave was when the Templars were rounded up by the King of France. They hid some of their valuable stuff from the commanders in the area in this cave, hoping that they would, well, expecting that they would go back, you know, when they'd sorted the king out. But obviously the king was more thorough than they planned, and a lot of them were killed or fled the country, never to return, and the stuff remained there. So, yeah, I think it's definitely got a Templar connection.
And why do you think that the mummy is the body of Mary Magdalene?
All right, yeah, I'm glad you asked me that. Because when I was filming it with Bruce, we had this remote camera which we put down a shaft. I don't know if it's, your listeners are clear that there is no entry into the shaft, into the tomb. There's just a hole in the top which we can lower a camera down and film, but there's no, we can't physically get in there, which is why we've approached the French for an excavation. But yeah, and when I was looking underneath the shroud, her hands were, her fingers of her hands were entwined, and this matches exactly the image that Sonia put on his altar, which is of a Mary Magdalene in a cave with her fingers entwined, and they matched more or less exactly. So that's why I think it was Mary Magdalene. That and the rumours that she is buried down around there somewhere. You know, I mean, this, which goes back hundreds of years that Mary Magdalene is buried in the area. It's not just like a recent modern thing.
Have you been able to get pieces of her, of the mummy's hair or bone or something that you were able, Could
we've got some hair samples which I managed to get hold of and pull out with the rods that I'd attached to the camera, and Bruce and Renee sent these off for DNA testing, and they was too degraded to get much back. They got it's too degraded, but she said her mother was the mother. I can't remember the technical name for it, but her mother line goes back to the Middle East, so which fits in with Mary Magdalene. But that's all we could get from the samples because they were just too degraded.
Well, I remember watching the Bloodline documentary, and apparently, if I remember right, one of the clues that you discovered that was written by Sonia said something to the effect that the Templars were the custodians of the body of Mary, and that they brought it to Rennes-le-Château. Is that right?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, that was message number two. Yeah, it mentioned the Templars bringing stuff back, and well, it's a bit cryptic, but yeah, I mean, reading between the lines, it's that Sonia, if he wrote the messages, believed that the Templars were involved and that they did bring this stuff back, and it was hidden, you know. But when Sonia, another thing that Sonia said in the message, why he didn't reveal it was because at the time it was too dangerous to do so. And he left it, his clues, why he actually embedded the clues in his church, was for someone in the future to find, and perhaps all this could be revealed then. Well, we have to remember, even during Sonia's time, the Inquisition was still active, you know, not in the way they were, you know, the 100 years before, but they were still active, and it was still, the church had a mighty hold over everybody, you know, they've lost a bit now, but at that time, even like it was just the priest that could read. It wasn't the average person that could read. It was just the priest. They still had the power which they don't have so much now. So that's why he couldn't reveal it now, and he left the clues, because it was just too dangerous for him to do so.
Well, to get into this tomb and to place the mummy, the Templars, if it was the Templars, they must have used a different opening than the one you found. So there must be some other way into it. Have you searched for some other way to get into that cave?
Yeah, definitely. Even from inside the tomb, the pictures were taken inside the tomb, we can see that there's an entrance leading out. But because we're actually on a mountain there, we don't know what way, if the entrance from the tomb goes to the left, to the right, if it goes down, up. We just don't know where it goes, but we have searched all round there, you know, for meters searched, but we can't find anything. See, the entrance could be 200 meters away. If you go out to the entrance from the tomb, like if you exit, to get inside, go out, it could turn left or right, and it could go on for 100 or 200 meters. So it's very hard to know exactly where it is. But even if the entrance was only a few meters away, and it's been blocked for nearly 100 years now, the undergrowth and all that down there is such that within a year, if you dug a hole within a year, that you wouldn't be able to see where the hole was, because it's, the undergrowth is just so thick out there. So if someone had filled the tomb in, put earth over it, the chances of finding it without actually knowing where it was is impossible, which is why we need this excavation done, so that we can, what I want to do is to, where we can see the entrance going out, dig a hole down into the entrance and then go into the tomb, because there's been talk about widening the shaft. But as it's more or less right above the body, I'm frightened, there's already been one rock fall in there, that if we start digging at the top, the whole thing could collapse and ruin everything, and the body could be crushed. So this is why I want to go just a little bit outside the cave, where we can see the entrance leading out, and just dig a hole down there and then go in. And then once we're in, we may be able to follow the exit from the tomb and see where it goes, and we might be able to go outside, and then everything will be brought out that way. Or it may even be part of this temple complex, and this could just be like a side room off of it, which would be exciting to find.
Well, are you going to have any control over the excavations that are done in the cave? Aren't you trying to get permission from the French government now in order to excavate it, and are you going to have any control over it if it happens?
Well, knowing the French, I probably won't have any control over it. We're trying to do it so that we do, but we're having a few problems with them in it. At first, they were very enthusiastic. Yeah, we can do this, we'll do that, we'll do this. But they keep running hot and cold. One minute they want to go ahead, the next minute, oh, no, it's not the right time, you know. But we're hoping to have a meeting with them soon to sort of iron out all the problems that they have, because we have to have archaeologists on board, and we accept that. You know, we wouldn't do it any other way. I mean, we don't want to dig a hole and then just go in there like, you know, this is an old book. You know, we won't go in there turning the pages and doing this and that. You know, it'll have to all be done properly. But I just want to be allowed to go in there, you know, stand at the entrance and just look in there, you know, not to go in. And to be on site, I want to be there when the excavation is taking place, and we need to get this, you know, authorised by the French before we can do it. And they just don't seem to be coming forwards with it.
Well, why do you think it is that they're so hesitant to move ahead with this?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think it might be the religious fallout that may come from it, if it is Mary Magdalene, you know. Maybe the church has had a word. I'm not saying anything to the church, you know, just, you know, these things happen. And so maybe the French are frightened, have been warned off, that take it easy. I don't know. I really don't know. But I thought they would be keen to get in there straight away and sort it all out, you know, get the body in there out before there's any more rock falls. You know, because there's an old book in there. I want to see what that old book says as well. And there's chests that we haven't opened, that we can't open. We want to get in there. There might be Templar documents in there that never been seen before, which might shed light on some of the things that they've done, you know, during their couple of hundred years reign there.
Well, we have a question for you, Ben. We have Edward on line one. Edward, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Grandpa Sir Mark. And
hello, Edward.
Simon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine.
What's your question for Ben?
My question is since the recent discoveries of the artifacts and excavations, has he been approached by any secret societies or temporal organizations to get involved with research or assistance in any way? And so how has he handled those type of
I've had emails from people saying that they're Templars and that, and they're very interested in what I found, and if we needed a hand for the excavation or anything, they'd be willing to help. But there's not anyone that's come forward and said that they know who it was, or they know of a document which sort of may shed light on who's in the tomb or anything like that, which I was hoping someone would come forward, you know, with the information out there in my book and the website and that. But no, no one has come forward as such and owned up saying they know who is in there or how it came about or anything.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
No, thank you for your question.
Thank you, Edward.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was kind of curious, Ben. I have been. It would definitely seem as though the Catholic Church would be taking a major interest in this, especially if it is the body of Mary Magdalene. Have you felt their influence at all in your work?
No, I haven't. No, I can't say. I mean, I've been a bit paranoid at times when I'm out there, you know, like when being followed and things like that. But nothing that's concrete that you can really say. But, yeah, the church is definitely there. I did have someone contact me from the Vatican, actually. I forget what his role was there, but I think he was an archivist or something like that. And we started chatting on email, and he was asking me about this tube and all that. I think he was... I got the idea he was probing for information. And I asked him a question, and I said, well, concerning the whole Rennes de Château affair... Are there people in the Vatican keeping an eye on that sort of area of France? Because it's quite strange that there's never ever, but given the history that's in the area, there's never been any major excavation or archaeology ever done there. I said, but are the Vatican keeping an eye, someone in Rome keeping an eye on this, the village of Rennes de Château? And he said yes.
Mm. Yeah, okay. That can be a little creepy, I suppose.
Yeah.
Are you committed to doing this by yourself or with just a very small group of assistants, or do you welcome help from other people that might show up and want to assist you, perhaps a Freemason or a Templar, for example?
What are we talking about, the excavation or just...
talking about your discoveries. Well, I guess right now I guess I'm talking about the search for the underground temple, because that's what you're most involved with at the moment.
Yeah.
So you do welcome outside help, huh?
Oh yes. I mean, I have a lot of emails. I have, you know, I get about 80 emails a day at the moment, and I get about 10 of them are people offering to help. You know, or they have an idea. And sometimes the ideas don't lead anything, but sometimes someone will come up with an idea and I think, yeah, well, why didn't I think of that? And it just, like, sheds that little bit of another bit of the jigsaw. It tells you where to place it, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, if anyone's got any ideas or anything, you know, contact me. My email's on my website.
So are you also amenable to taking people to see the cave?
No, I can't. I'm not allowed. The French, we've got an agreement with the French that they won't go there without us, and we won't go there without them. And we're not to tell anyone about it, and nor are they, the location.
Well, are you going to be in the area? Are you going to be in the area in September?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a way off yet, but yeah, I mean, we're usually down there in September, yeah.
Well, maybe we can check in with you at that point when myself and Nancy Safford will be leading a pilgrimage down there, as I mentioned. And it would certainly be nice to connect up with you and see how your work is going.
What dates are you there?
Between the 20th and the 30th.
That's right, yeah, 20th and the 30th, yeah. Oh, I've been to most of those sites that you mentioned, actually. Yeah, I'm sure we could be down there.
Yeah, well, we'd definitely like to catch up with you and see how your work is going. And maybe if we have time, maybe we can even somehow assist you with it. If you're at a point where you could use assistance. So we'll just see. It'd be nice to keep it open and connect up with you at that time. So let me see, where are we? During your search and discovering all these different clues, have you found legitimate evidence or documentation of Jesus and Mary having been married and that they and they're spawning a bloodline?
No, nothing concrete, nothing that I can say, yeah, that proof that that they were married and had children and all that. Though I personally believe they were, and I'd like to believe that they were, you know, I think they would have made a nice couple. But no, to answer your question, no.
Well, perhaps when you can get into the cave, certainly there seems like there would be more clues that is definitely the body of Mary Magdalene. It's surrounded by some metallic objects and parchment and so forth. Can you tell us a bit about what else is in the cave besides the mummy?
Yeah. The metallic object you're on about is a chest which has rotted away. There's three similar sized chests, and one of them has rotted away. And what we can see on the camera is some chalices and some cups, and made of gold because they're not tarnished, and some what looks like gold coins all in this chest. And we showed this footage to a priest, an Anglican priest. And he said that the cups were probably used in a veneration of the body, like a ceremony, when the body was out somewhere where the templars or whoever could get hold of it, maybe they had it in a room or something. And these cups were used maybe on a feast day, if it's Mary Magdalene the 22nd, and to do this ceremony around her, which was very interesting, you know. He said that some of those cups are very similar to the ones that he uses even today, you know, like in Christian rituals in the church and that, which was very interesting. And also in the cave, in the tomb, there is two larger chests, and on one of these chests is an old book. It must be about 4 or 5 inches thick and probably 10 inches by 10 inches. And it is badly decayed, half the binding is gone, and you can see the pages are a bit mildewy, all that. And all we can see is a couple of letters embossed in the cover. And it looks like it could be an L or a C and an O, and the third letter is like the back of a straight line, so we don't know what it is. Well, I've looked in Latin, French, and everything, trying to work out what it was, but there's just not enough of the letters there to work out the title of the book. And as I mentioned, there's these chests, and it's in these chests that we hope we will find some sort of documentation pertaining to the body of who it is, if it's Mary Magdalene or someone else. It would be nice if the chests are full of Templar documents rather than treasure, you know, though I wouldn't say no to treasure, but it's knowledge which is what it's all about, I think, in this instance. Know who the body is, how it got there. If it is Mary Magdalene and it has her lineage and her offspring, you know, her bloodline documented, that would be fantastic. It's just a case of getting in there and opening those chests and finding out.
Does it look like it could possibly happen within, let's say, the next 6 months to a year that the French government...
Oh, God, I hope so, yeah. I mean, if the French don't hurry up and decide, I think of even trying to do it myself, you know, just to get the stuff out there and get some press in so that the objects can't be covered up or hidden, you know, that they're documented on film by outsiders so that they have to go and be preserved and put in a museum and all that, because it's just, the cave is deteriorating. They've got to be got out quick before the whole lot, you know, the whole cave just falls in and everything is ruined and lost. So, yes,
well, I don't think you're going to have any problem finding help to do that, Ben.
No, I've had lots of offers of help to dig into it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, would be interested. So let us know, huh? You know, let us know. Tell me about this temple. What do you know about this underground temple?
Well, if the rumor and the legend is true in the area, it's a copy of the original Temple of Solomon. I think on the top, obviously a smaller scale, but it's meant to be in a huge cavern. And there's a hot spring running through it. Because in the winter we go up there when the trees, because it's easy to see places in the winter around Wren because the trees have lost their leaves. A lot of the trees have lost their leaves. And we go around and we look on a cold day. We look for any hot air rising out of the hills. And if we see anything, then we go up there and check it out because there's meant to be a hot spring running through it as part of a ritual bathing process or something like that. But, yes, as I say, it's meant to be a replica of the Temple of Solomon. And the body of Jesus is meant to be around there as well. That's another one of the rumours, along with Mary Magdalene.
So what is the legend as to who built this temple?
Well, it was built pre-Templars. It's very old. No one seems to know who started it, but it was built like we're talking 1,000 years ago, not a few hundred. But no one knows who built it. Maybe it was, I don't know, the priests that escaped from the temple during the time of the Romans, you know, the fall of Jerusalem, in 70 AD, because. We just had a power cut here. Maybe it was them that started building it. But it's inside a mountain in a huge cavern. And this, the map, the underground map that we have, shows a huge cavern in the center with tunnels leading off.
And I'm sure you've checked out, what is it, Bugarak? The big mountain there, the sacred mountain. I'm sure you've checked that out pretty thoroughly.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they've closed the tunnels up now that are underneath. They used to be able to go in there some at one time, but they've put a big steel door on there now. But apparently they haven't been completely explored either. They've gone in so far and they haven't gone anymore. So always makes me wonder why people stop at a certain point and don't go on. You know, is it someone saying, right, no, block that up, there's no more exploring done there? You know, is it the church, you know, back and stepping in again? But, I mean, there's people in the remote areas and they're going in tunnels which are flooded with water and they're going in miles. Why would they stop at a tunnel which is easy to get at, not underwater? All you need is a bit of caving gear and they're not allowed to explore it. It just seems very strange to me, especially with the Bugarash being, as you say, a sacred mountain. You'd think there'd be something under there worth exploring.
Yeah, from what I understand, apparently there's a lot of legends, and even there's some Templar legends associated with the mountain. So, of course, that piques my interest for sure.
Yeah.
Do you think that Saunier was able to find that underground temple himself?
Well, you would think so, because if he did write these messages, he's actually put a map leading to it. And it does say on the on the message another thing that he turned to the devil, which we can't work out what he meant. After seeing something in when he was out looking, he saw something, and he said, "I turned to the devil," and I don't know what that means. So if any of your listeners could know what that means, I don't mean that he went devil worshipping. I think it might be an old saying or something like that. But there's a lot of little snippets in the messages, which he seems to be personal from Sonia. So I don't really know what they mean. You know, they're hard to work out. But maybe one day when getting this tomb, we'll know what he was on about.
Well, I wonder if that tomb, or the temple rather, doesn't have some connection to the Templars, that perhaps they built it, because there's a legend that soon after they were formed, they made a vow to the patriarch of the king of the Eastern Holy Roman Empire, that they would rebuild the Temple of Solomon. And we don't know any place else that they actually accomplished that. But they made a strict vow to do it at some point. So I'm wondering if they didn't build it in the Languedoc. You know. Anyway,
yeah, I mean, they could, and they were certainly present in the area, you know, and they had enough time to do it and the manpower. So maybe you're right, but. So the legend goes back older than the Templars, that this Temple of Solomon was there. But maybe it was started and they finished it off, you know.
Well, this is kind of a strange question, or maybe it's not. But I'm going to ask it anyway. But, do you have an interest or an understanding or a belief in reincarnation? And if so, do you think that you might have some past connection to that area of the Languedoc, which is why you are being led on to find these amazing discoveries now?
I was asked this by someone before a few months ago, and when I first entered the church, I'd never known a place like it. I mean, it was like I could see clearly. And I've never had that feeling before, and I've never had it anywhere else. But maybe it is reincarnation. I mean, I've never actually ever believed in it myself, you know, until after thinking about how I was led to these messages and how I was able to, you know, to decipher them and other people couldn't. It was as if Sonia was, like, helping me, you know. But, yeah, I would love to believe there is reincarnation, that we come back as someone else and we keep coming over and living again. You know, that would be great. But, yeah, I've definitely had a feeling ever since I've been at Wren that I've never had before.
Well, you're going to be coming over to the States in July for this conference that Rene Barnett's organizing called the Esotericon. Can you speak a bit about that?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it. She invited me a couple of weeks ago, saying that doing a conference, would I be interested in speaking? And I said, yes, I would love to. But I don't know anything other than that. I mean, I don't know the details of it or anything like that. But I'm looking forward to it. I like America. And I've only been there once, and all I managed to see is airports and bus stations and taxi ranks. I haven't actually explored America
yet.
There's
a little bit more than that. If you want to see someplace really nice, come out and visit here in Arizona. Well, we've got the Grand Canyon, which of course is spectacular, but we also have where I live, Sedona, Arizona, which is very unique in all the world. And besides that, it's got incredible energy. It's a very powerful vortex area. So, you know, if you've got a afternoon free, come on out and visit.
I would love to explore America. Maybe get one of your big RVs and drive around for a few months. You know,
Well, if you ever get out in my area, let me know. I think Renee mentioned that one of her goals of having this conference is to kind of bring together everybody that's been involved with the Bloodline Mysteries, and maybe so that you can affiliate and perhaps network and start working together.
Yeah, it sounds good. It all sounds very interesting. I think it's going to be really good. Really, really good.
Well, I hope you, I wish you best of luck with that. And do you have any other events coming up or any books coming out or anything that you'd like to mention?
No, I've got, as you know, I've got my Lost Tomb book out, which is still selling well, I'm pleased to say. I've just written a novel version of it, you know, a fiction version, which I should finish within the next few weeks, so that will be out. But, yeah, all things in the future.
So if anybody wants to contact you, they can go to your website, and it's, what is it, twoman.com, or?
Benhammett.com.
Benhammett.com, and then they can write you an email from your website?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, it's been more than a joy to have you on, Ben. You're doing some amazing work, and we're all sitting on pins and needles wanting to know what's in that cave, as you are. So perhaps we can have you on again in the future, and you can maybe give us a later update about your work.
Yeah, we're hoping I'll be talking about excavation when I next come on.
Let's hope so, yeah, let's hope so. In the meantime, good luck, and I hope to catch up with you in September. I'll send you an email telling you exactly when I'll be there, and we'll try to make that happen if we can.
Okay, yeah, look forward to it. And thanks for having me on your show.
Well, thank you, Ben. You take care now. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Okay, bye. Thank you.
Okay, bye for now. Next week on The Guardians of the Holy Grail, we're going to have Stephen Defoe. He's an author of a number of different books on Freemasonry and the Templars. Well-respected author, and his books are actually used as an authoritative text by the Initiatic Society. So he's done his homework. He knows his stuff, and so you're not going to want to miss that show. And most recently, he's published a book on the first man, I can't remember his name, but the first Freemason that actually spilled the beans, that went out and told the secrets. And of course, you know, when you take your vow in Freemasonry, it's said that you'll get your tongue cut off if you reveal the secret. So we're going to find out exactly what happened to him next time. So you're not going to want to miss that. So same time, same place. I'll see you next week. And have a wonderful week. And always remember that the Holy Grail lies right within you. So bye for now.